This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Hello to you, Georgia Hargreaves, here with you for the Country Hour this afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Now, very shortly, you're going to hear from the chairman of livestock shipping company Wellard, who'll be going into some detail about why the company delisted. And after news headlines at 12:30, we'll head to the Bureau of Meteorology for a detailed forecast on what you can expect over Christmas. And speaking of Christmas, if you've got a tree up at your place, did you opt for a plastic one or the real thing? Later you'll hear from a Christmas tree farmer who can't keep up with the demand. First though, WA's water regulator is investigating the impact of a southwest bauxite mine on the water supply and salinity at neighbouring farmland. South 32's Worsley mine, around 180 kilometres south of Perth, has approval to take 900 million litres of groundwater a year, most of which is used for dust suppression. Russell Reynolds farms in an area between the mine and the Hotham River near Boddington, and he thinks South 32 is to blame for the water salinity issues he's noticing on the farm, which he says have only gotten worse since they purchased the property.
When we bought it, obviously it was because fresh water. I talked to the last owners about it, and the water supply has told me that, you know, the water there's good. It's never, you know, the soak's never dried up, anything like that. So in about 2014, I had a guy here to dig a small dam. And he had some water testing equipment, so he tested the soak, and the TDS level, salt level, was 180. So that's 2014. So then, basically, today, we tested again in 2018. TDS level was 770, and then tested in January, end of January, start of February this year, and it's 1100. So. Yeah, so basically the salt level's gone up 600% in 11 years.
If it goes up any more, what does that mean for you and your plans to create a little nest for yourself there?
Well, basically, the TDS level hits 1,200. It's not acceptable for human use. So basically, it's not far off that. So, you know, if it continues like it is, we're at the point where the house is half built, ready to sort of do plumbing, but it's sort of, you know, do we hook it up? Do we run two separate water systems through the house? Or do we just go to, you know, to rainwater only, which would be a bit disappointing based on what the water used to be. Mm. So, but, I mean, those results, you know, South 32's documentation as well. So, basically, there's a testing bore just above our property, P12, which they say is 1,100 in TDS. And just down here below the road, where the water flows underground too, comes out of becomes surface water, their testing is the same as well. So basically it's gone up 600%, and, you know, they have not give us any indication of their testing or anything like that. And basically it's, if it continues, it's a waste of time connecting the house to it, basically.
How do you feel with the situation you're in? You know, you've bought in, you knew the mine was here, but yeah, how do you feel about the situation you're facing?
Well, I think it's, you know, we rang South 32 in 2017 when they dried this whole place up. So there was no water left here whatsoever. So basically had to cart stock water. So I contacted them then. I've contacted them previously about, you know, the soak dropping in level. But basically it's a bit disappointing because they've made no effort whatsoever about controlling water flow so we still get enough water. They made no effort to decrease in the TDS level. So basically their correspondence to us is nothing. But at the end of the day, it's disappointing from 2010 to now of what it's going to end up. So it's gone up 600%. What's it going to be in another 10 years? It just, you know, I think it'll just become a salty spring, salty area. Yeah, basically it's vegetation's changing over the last couple of years, plants that like salt that are growing, so it just goes on and on and on.
Southwest farmer Russell Reynolds talking about how the water salinity on his property has increased by 600% in the last 11 years. Now, ABC Southwest reporter John Daly has been following this story closely. John, why is the mining company being blamed for this farmer's water issues?
So Russell Reynolds' property sits at the end of this underwater stream, and further up that stream, there's a major production bore field that South 32 is currently extracting about 600,000 litres of water a day from. So Russell Reynolds sees that as being, you know, that massive use of groundwater as being behind the rising salinity in his groundwater and also changes to surface water flows on his property. He said that a surface water stream that runs into a dam on his property has dried up for the past few years and has been getting progressively drier. As for the salinity, as he mentioned, you know, potentially 500% increase in the last decade, which is a lot. And I've also seen proof of salinity level increases from other nearby spring-fed dams on other neighbouring properties that have increased by, you know, more than 100% in 4 years. Now, I should say that it's unclear whether South 32 is to blame for all of this. There are some longer-term rainfall trends and historical clearing for farming, which also have an effect on rising salinity levels and groundwater levels in this area. But the regulator is looking into Mr. Russell's claims, and they are taking it quite seriously. Now, I put his concerns to South 32, and I didn't get a direct answer to my questions, but the company did give me a fairly brief statement saying that it was aware of the matters that had been raised and that it manages its groundwater in accordance with its approved water management plan. And I will just add that the farms neighbouring this property, I suppose, are concerned now that South 32 can now draw 400 million litres more water per year, that some of the water issues that they're observing could only get worse.
So you have travelled out to some nearby farms then. Was it a similar situation there?
So this is what I find most unusual about this is the differences in what's happening to the water on different farms that are within kilometres of each other are quite stark, right? You've got Russell Reynolds, whose issue is that he's losing water, and that's because he's sitting basically below, well, it could be because he's sitting basically below a giant bore field that's used for dust suppression, and there's a lot of water being taken out of that. But on other nearby farms, the property is the complete opposite. There's water everywhere. There's groundwater levels are rising rapidly, and it's causing waterlogging and salinity issues as well. Now, again, unclear if South 32 is to blame for that, but there could be what's known as water mounding occurring, which basically means that when you strip mine a large area, you clear the forest, you take the cap rock off, the water that would otherwise be getting like held and arrested by those trees and by that rock just flows straight down into the low-lying areas, which in this case are these farms. And so I visited one farm where there was literally a surface water stream that had appeared out of the forest below the Mount Saddleback mining area in a matter of years. And you could see it very visibly cutting through the forest because there were just rows and rows of dead jarrah trees. And as it came out onto the property, there was salt scald beside the stream. So it appears like these changes are fairly recent. But look, I will say that changing water levels vary across, you know, property to property. Rising salinity does, however, seem to be the common thread here. Whether groundwater is going up or down, these farming properties are seeing rising salinity. The question of whether South 32 is to blame for that is a bit harder to answer. South 32 did commission a water study in 2020, which concluded that its mining activity hasn't really caused any increase in salinity above what's been caused by that long-term declining rainfall trend that we're seeing in the southwest. But of course, the lived experience of neighbouring farmers seems to contradict that.
Okay, so what has WA's water regulator had to say about this?
So the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation has confirmed that it is investigating Russell Reynolds' concerns, but DEWA says it will take months to come up with a finding because it's quite complex, as you can imagine, determining, you know, what the factors are in those major hydrological changes. Now, as a condition of South32's expansion of its Worsley mine that was granted earlier this year, the state government said there had to be no adverse impacts to neighbouring groundwater users as a result of the expansion. And that's what at least Mr. Reynolds is claiming has happened on his property. But DEWA is yet to determine if the changes that he's seen constitute a breach of that environmental condition set on the miner.
John, thank you so much for the update.
No worries.
ABC reporter John Daly there. Now, this is a pretty complicated story. So if you'd like to read more of the detail on this one, just do a search online on the ABC News website. If you type in South 32, you'll see John's article right at the top. 12:15 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Now, those in the cattle industry might have to figure out how they can help fund building some new live export ships. That's the advice from Wellard Chairman John Klepek, because, as you heard yesterday, his livestock shipping company has been delisted from the ASX. Wellard was once Australia's largest livestock export business, but it was removed from the stock exchange last week after selling its last live export ship in August. John Klepek says they were left with no choice but to request being removed from the ASX.
10 years, you know, we started off, we had five ships plus one ship in the shipyard in Croatia to be built. So we would have been a six-ship company. That was on the public listing of Wellard, which was almost 10 years to the day that we delisted just the week just gone. So, yeah, it's been a big ride. There's been a lot of rough seas, for want of better words, given that we're in the shipping industry. There's been positives, but there's been a lot of headwinds that the company encountered. And look, ships are a very high-cost business. A ship is not like a car where you just park up when it's got no work. You still have to keep a crew on board. It still consumes fuel. It's quite expensive. And for a period of time, we had ships idling with no work for, you know, the larger ships. One of the ships went nearly a year without work. So with the debt that was combined with that, we had to make the decision to pay back the debt. So we had to sell the ships. Fortunately, we did have a very high quality and high class fleet that made the ships appealing to the limited buyers that were out there. So steadily, you know, we've ended, all the debt was repaid, you know, 100 cents in the dollar. The shareholders have ended up with almost 20 cents return, which, you know, albeit it's less than the original listing price. At one stage, I think the lowest we got down to was around 1 cent. So people formed the view the company would go under. So we did have a rocky time. So it's a confluence of factors, but primarily it's the decline in the market.
It sounds like there were a lot of contributing factors.
Yes, there's no one thing, but the underlying thing was the poor trading markets. From listing, they went in a steady decline. You know, the main market was cattle to Indonesia and Vietnam. Breeding cattle to China was a lucrative market for a period of time, and that's now stopped as well. And then it's the South American to, you know, predominantly Brazil to Turkey was a market that Christmas Eve, what was it, Christmas Eve, I think it was 2018, the market closed with legislation overnight. So we went from having ships employed to that's the last shipment, and a market absolutely closed.
Over time, the fleet's been sold off to, I guess, meet financial obligations, and I understand the Ocean Drover was the last ship to go back in August this year.
Yes.
So once that happened, was delisting pretty much inevitable, would you say?
Yeah, we did look at other options, but being, you know, on the smaller side, to be a listed company is quite onerous in terms of the obligations that are imposed. And unless you're of a critical size, which Wellard wasn't, being listed, it doesn't justify the costs of it. And, you know, you stay listed if you're going to raise more money and you have a growth vision, which the company originally had, which is the reason why it went public, where you're going to tap the market for more funds, et cetera, equity to expand. So given the opportunities that presented once we sold the last ship, predominantly in the agri space, we formed the opinion that a delisting And look, the company is only staying alive because it has the we're claiming in the Brett class action, which we expect to receive something in the end of the day. That's a long process. You know, it's 2011. We're now 14 years down the track and still hasn't resolved. So one might say we're optimistic that there's an outcome in the next 2 to 3 years. But the critical part of that will be the next appeal, which is early next year. So we remain an unlisted public company, so we haven't closed up shop. We're not liquidated. We're still alive, but not in a listed form.
That's the Northern Territory-based Brett Cattle Company class action.
Correct.
You're referring
Correct.
To.
We're a claimant, and we're of the opinion today that there will be a payment eventually made. When and the quantum is unknown, but. Just on a straight cost-benefit analysis, we have formed the view that it's worth staying an unlisted public company while that event goes through its courses. The next point will be the appeal that is occurring next year. Once that occurs, we'll have another view of where that case is going to go. And if we form the view that there isn't a positive outcome for us, that we will then seek to wind the company up completely.
Is there anything still operating currently at Wellard?
No. No, all operations have ceased after the sale of Singapore. Was our operational hub is completely closed. We've cut the everything down to bare minimum just whilst we await the Brett class action.
Looking ahead, what do you see as the future for live exports from Australia?
Oh, very, at the moment, it's very positive. The market is back to good volumes. I don't follow it as closely as I once did, obviously, but I know the pricing is very good for the producers. You know, beef pricing is good. Once you get it over that $4 level, it does become a problematic for the Indonesians. So I would like to see, the producers do something for the Indonesian market to ensure that they still get their 500 to, three quarters of a million head to keep those feedlots alive. The last time the price went up, the producers sent the cattle south, and that caused all sorts of problems with the feedlots in Indonesia. I wouldn't like to see that happen again. So that's the only potential negative I see at the moment. If you have sustained high prices, the producers, I know it's very difficult to do, but the producers do have to effectively quarantine, half a million to a million head of cattle every year to keep that market alive. And it's very price sensitive. Otherwise, you start getting Indian buffalo come back into the market and Brazilian beef also come into the market, and you won't recover that position. So other than that, I think the industry is in good shape. You know, the operators are doing a pretty good job. Wellard had an outstanding record of 99.9 sort of success rates on shipments, and our competitors have also improved greatly as well.
And just finally, how concerned do you think the northern cattle industry should be about the ageing live export fleet?
Extremely, because the last ship built was the Ocean Shearer. The new ship purpose built was 2016. You know, we've been advocates of, ships beyond 25 years should not be allowed to come to Australia for a variety of reasons. I won't go in because it's not for me to comment. We're not in the industry anymore. It's not for me to comment. But ship safety and animal safety is closely linked to ship age and quality of ship and management of ship. So new ships need to be built, simple as that. Otherwise, the people that have, you could get into a situation where there's only one provider or two providers of ships and they're too old. We were proponents of producers being involved in the economics of a ship, i.e. Have a shareholding in the ship. They're very expensive to build now, as anyone who's doing anything on the capital work side of things. The price of all capital goods have increased greatly, and ships are very expensive, and you're not going to get someone to build a brand new ship unless they have someone underlying it with some sort of supply contract. In the iron ore world or the LNG world, you build a tanker or a super carrier, you're backed up with a 10-year contract, guaranteed price, guaranteed volumes. In the live export world, you're looking shipment to shipment. 3 months is about all you get, and pricing is variable depending on the underlying market, and that's not sustainable for someone to put huge amounts of capital into a ship. Look, it's a great industry. Wellard was in it for, was a stalwart. You look at the history of the, I think it's 50 or 60 years, Wellard was the major player, and I think a lot of the people in the north, everyone knows Wellard, and I think a lot of them would shed a tear that Wellard's gone. but you would go forward and there will be a new Wellard that will take the place and move forward.
Wellard Chairman John Klepek speaking with Jess Baker. And in that interview, you heard him reference a class action led by Brett Cattle Company, which is against the Australian government over the 2011 live export ban on cattle to Indonesia. Wellard is a class member in that action, which argues the temporary ban caused substantial financial losses to live exporters and related businesses. Now, I want to know, do you agree with John Klepek that those in the cattle industry have a looming problem with ageing ships? Text in your thoughts. The number is 0448 922 604. This text has come through from Caroline, who says, a sad end with the sale of Wellard's last ship. They were leaders in world-class transportation of live animals. Sheep exporters, forestry and fishing have all been whacked by heavy-handed government policy. Politics is a numbers game, and there aren't enough foresters, fishers and farmers to affect the outcome of the next state election, and so the city-centric Labor Party rampages on unchecked. Thanks for texting in. 0448 922 604 is the number if you'd like to be part of the conversation on the Country Hour today. Now, just after the news headlines, you'll get the latest on that low pressure system and the forecast for Christmas Day. And Richard Hudson will also go through the rainfall figures. But just to steal his thunder, up in the Kimberley, Wyndham has had a big dump of rain. The airport gauge recorded over 100 millimetres up until 9 a.m. today. But it seems the downpour was pretty isolated because a station just 20 kilometres south of town got hardly anything. Alida Woodland from Diggers Rest Station says she's hopeful more rain is on the way.
We had big rain. We got 2.4 mil.
It's pretty disappointing when you look at what the Wyndham Airport got, which I believe was 117 mils.
Yeah, that's right. We've been missing out on the big falls. Wyndham's been getting most of them. We would love some more rain.
How's it looking on the ground right now? Is the country starting to green up at all?
Yeah, it's green. There's good ground. Dams have plenty of water. It's just nice to get some more soaking rain. Things will keep growing that way.
Alida Woodland from Diggers Rest Station talking to Jess Baker. And Carlton Hill Station is about 40 kilometres northwest of Kununurra. It got a bit of rain overnight, and Assistant Manager Cameron Butt says the station's looking nice and green at the moment.
Yeah, we got 28 mil just last night, and another part of the station got about 25. But yeah, it's looking really nice and green and good, plenty of water laying about, everything's coming up. We're up to about 450 for the season so far since October.
Yeah, right. Is that unusual? Is that more than you usually get?
No, it might be a little bit in front, but it's not. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's we've had a good start, and we needed a good start. So, yeah, cattle have come off it pretty well. They've come forward very good. So,
can you tell me more about how it's looking on the ground right now? You said it's nice and green. Have any roads or paddocks taken a hit, or it's all looking good up there?
It's all looking good. Most of it's been nice, easygoing rain, nothing ridiculous. We got nothing out of that cyclone that come through a month ago, so it's all not so much washing out or nothing. Everything's grown. Everything's been in inch or a little bit over an inch rainfall, so the grass has come forward and grown really well. Been plenty of days of sunlight in between too, which is nice.
Yeah, so it's not a constant stream, it's not steady rain, it's more a couple of big storms coming and going, is it?
Yeah, so far it's storms, but nothing real savage that has caused too much problems for us. It's all just been good storms, yeah, and then some few days of sunlight and then another storm.
Yeah, just what you want this time of year then, I guess.
Yeah.
It's officially Christmas week. Do you have many staff members still at the station, or has it emptied out a little bit as everyone goes home for Christmas?
Yeah, we've emptied out most of the staff. We have, I think there's four of us left, and then my partner's family are up for Christmas, so there is a handful of us out there, but it is nice and quiet. There's not too many people to worry about, which is nice.
Are you guys doing anything special to celebrate Christmas? Do you have any special traditions at the stations, foods or games or anything else you like to pull out at this time of year?
No, nothing nothing too outside of a general Australian-style Christmas. And then it just comes on the Boxing Day, which we'll be watching the cricket. That'll be as extravagant as we get.
Assistant Manager at Carlton Hills Station, Cameron Butt. He was speaking with Jess Baker. And it's 12:30. I've got Charlie Mills here in the Karratha studio for the news headlines today, so I don't get left hanging again. Charlie, hello.
G'day, Georgia. Making news this afternoon, a tropical cyclone has formed more than 1,000 kilometres off Western Australia's coast. Cyclone Grant is heading in a westerly direction and is expected to pass close to the Cocos Keeling Islands on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. The Bureau of Meteorology is expecting damaging wind gusts of up to 130 kilometres an hour, flash flooding and heavy rain. Grant is currently a Category 1 and is expected to reach Category 2 strength by tomorrow. A 21-year-old Albany man has been handed a mandatory prison term for removing his ankle monitoring device while on home detention. Elijah Reid English pleaded guilty in the Albany Magistrates Court to removing the monitor and giving police false details. His defence counsel, David Robinson, told the court his client was living at Yakamaya on December the 4th when he removed the device to go see his sister after feeling stuck and bored. The court heard English was located by police the following day and gave them a false identity. The magistrate says she understands English's reason for leaving his home, but she was required to impose a mandatory 6-month sentence for removing a tracking device. And the Commonwealth Bank has reversed its decision to refuse compensation to customers who were wrongly charged millions of dollars in excessive bank fees. The Australian Securities and Investment Commission put the bank, including subsidiary Bankwest, on notice in July after it was found to have incorrectly charged low-income earners on Centrelink payments a total of $270 million in fees. In a statement, the Commonwealth Bank has confirmed it will refund $68 million to impacted customers, just over a quarter of what was charged. More news coming up, Georgia, at 1 p.m.
Thank you for the update, Charlie.
Thanks.
It is 12:58 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Time to head to the Bureau of Meteorology. Luke Huntington is here with us today. Luke, let's start in the north. Is there much rain on the way?
Yeah, there is and has been quite a bit of rain up in the Kimberley area. So around 20 to 50 millimetres isolated, 100 around Wyndham in the last 24 hours. So those kind of rainfall figures are pretty indicative of what we'll see for the remainder of today as well. There's quite a large area of showers and thunderstorms around just due to a low pressure trough over the Kimberley. It's dragging all the moisture in from the north. So as I said, tomorrow we'll see those showers and thunderstorms. Storms continuing as well, and there could be some heavy falls around as well. So we could be looking at those isolated falls approaching that 100 millimetres throughout Wednesday, most likely 20 to 50 millimetres across the Kimberley. But that'll continue throughout Thursday as well with those rainfall figures in the Kimberley. Friday looks like the trough moves slightly further north, so you'll probably be looking at sort of the heaviest falls sort of around Wyndham, Kununurra, Argyle area, Columbaroo. It will gradually ease later in the day, and by Friday we will see a significant easing in that rainfall, so probably only around 20 to 30 millimetres around for the Kimberley area. And those heavier falls on the Saturday will probably be most likely in the far northern Kimberley, so Columbaroo, Kununurra, Wyndham area. So very wet for the next few days and then easing towards the weekend. And then for the remainder of the north, we are seeing some showers and thunderstorms pop up right throughout the Pilbara. But yeah, there's nowhere near as much rainfall associated with storms. So you might get an isolated fall up to sort of around the 20 to 30 millimetres. But otherwise, it's going to be pretty isolated with the heavier falls through the Pilbara. But right throughout today, tomorrow into Thursday, we're expecting thunderstorms throughout the Pilbara. And then on Friday, we'll see some drier air come in. So a contraction into the northeastern Pilbara on Friday and Saturday. So it's really just the next couple of days right throughout the Pilbara of getting those showers and thunderstorms. And they are forecast also throughout the Gascoyne region for today, tomorrow and Thursday. But through the Gascoyne, we're not expecting too much rainfall. So it's pretty much dry thunderstorms through the Gascoyne for the next few days. And then over in the Eucla, we could get a chance of a thunderstorm on Friday, just as a trough moves into the area. Again, there'd probably be mostly dry thunderstorms associated with that, and just a chance of a shower over the chance of a shower and thunderstorm over the Goldfields as well on Boxing Day. But again, they're most likely going to be dry thunderstorms, so not much rainfall. By the weekend, Saturday, we'll probably see still a small area of thunderstorms over the southeast Gascoyne going into the northwest Goldfields, but again, not much rainfall associated with that.
Okay, so can you give some detail on the winds forecast for the central and southern parts of WA? Which areas specifically, and how windy are we talking?
It's going to be pretty gusty the next few days. So we are talking probably around that 35 to 40 kilometre per hour, gusting up to around 50 or 60. So quite windy across the western part of WA and the central parts, just due to this strong high pressure system moving south of the state. So yeah, quite gusty conditions expected.
And what can we expect for Christmas this year? We heard yesterday it's going to be a scorcher. Is that what the latest is still?
If you're looking down at, most of the state's going to be a scorcher. With all that rain and thunderstorms around in the northern Kimberley, you're only looking at low 30 degree temperatures. But yeah, around pretty much the rest of the state, you're looking at very high temperatures. So the Pilbara into the 40s through most places into the Gascoyne, apart from the West Gascoyne where we should get an earlier sea breeze. So Carnarvon only over 31. But down into the Southwest Land Division, most places are going for high 30s towards 40 degree temperatures. The cooler ones are Albany 30 degrees, but I guess that's pretty warm for them, and 32 for Esperance. And then I'll just go through the weather for the Southwest Land Division for the next few days. We are expecting not much today, but with the trough developing off the west coast the next couple of days, the thunderstorm activity will gradually come down from the north. So the central west district is the bullseye for thunderstorms tomorrow afternoon, probably north of Durian Bay, you may see a thunderstorm, and they're probably classified as dry thunderstorm. So yeah, very little rainfall, no rainfall reaching the ground with that. And heading into Thursday, the thunderstorm area does move further south. So on Christmas Day, we've got the thunderstorms right throughout the central west district, coming down into the lower west, covering Perth, and also into the northwestern wheat belt. So we've got Del Wallinu covered in that area. So dry thunderstorms are a risk as well. And overlaid on that, we've got extreme fire dangers with those windy easterly, with those gusty easterly. So Wednesday and Thursday is not looking great for fire weather conditions, especially when you've got those thunderstorms around, possible dry lightning starting fires. And even on Friday, with the trough moving inland, we do see a cool change along that west coastal area with temperatures going back to the mid to high 20s. But we do see a large area of thunderstorm activity forecast for the central and eastern parts of the Southwest Land Division. So basically down towards the Albany region, the eastern wheat belt area, sort of around that Southern Cross area, and then right throughout the Esperance region, including Esperance itself, Salmon Gums. And they'll be classified as dry thunderstorms as well. And we do have a large area of extreme fire danger through that area as well. So yeah, the next few days until Friday is not looking great in terms of fire weather conditions.
Yeah, not ideal at all. And just quickly, what's the latest on Tropical Cyclone Grant?
Yeah, Tropical Cyclone Grant. So this morning at 9 a.m. Perth time, it was still 395 kilometres east of the Cocos Islands, but it is now a Category 1 cyclone, gusts up to around 95 kilometres per hour, and it's due to move in a west-northwesterly direction over the next couple of days, and that means it's heading towards the Cocos Islands. It's due to upgrade to a Category 2 system by tomorrow morning, and it's due to pass the Cocos Islands very close by on Christmas morning. We've got probably around 8:30, 9 o'clock Western time, which is 7 a.m. Cocos time. So that'll be where the system does pass close by. And that is expected to pass as a Category 2 system. So we could see destructive wind gusts up to 130 kilometres per hour as it passes on Christmas Day. But we could see damaging wind gusts up to 90 kilometres or 100 kilometres per hour develop as early as tomorrow afternoon. So there is a period from tomorrow afternoon right throughout Christmas Day where you could get those damaging to destructive wind gusts and also some heavy rainfall beginning as well. But on Boxing Day, those risks would ease. We've got the cyclone moving to the west of Cocos by Boxing Day. So it's really just from tomorrow afternoon right through Christmas Day where we'll see those impacts.
And is there any other cyclonic activity on the radar that could affect WA?
There is a potential tropical low to develop off the Kimberley coast mid to late this week. So we're calling it a potential tropical low OHU. So it hasn't developed yet, but from mid to late this week. And it currently has a low chance of developing into a cyclone from the weekend. So like a 5 to 10% chance at this stage. So it just depends whether that low does develop and whether it does move, stays over water or moves over land. So there's high uncertainty associated with that. So that's why we've got that sort of 5 to 10% chance at the moment.
One to keep an eye on then. Thank you for the update, Luke.
Thanks.
It is 20 to 1 on the Country Hour. Richard Hudson, can you run us through the rainfall figures?
Yeah, so as Luke just mentioned, most of the activities in the Kimberley, so it'll be 20 mils and above. Broome had 26 mils, Country Downs 56, Curtin Airport 47, Dampier Downs 39, Dabisa 20, Doongan 32, Halls Creek 23, Kilto Station 34, Kununurra's checkpoint tipped out 57 mils and the Deeperd station there tipped out 75. Mount Amherst 36, Mount Barnett 22, Mount Winifred 31, Nicholson 20, Sturt Creek 21, Erdiella 26 and Wyndham recorded 118. But as you heard in the first half, you didn't have to go too far from there and the rainfall totals were much less. In the rest of the state, the only other rain worth reading out was in the Pilbara. Chela Plains had 8 mils and Mount Stewart and Red Hill both had 4 mils. Nowhere else had more than around about a mil, I think. Just due to the conditions, a number of shires have got a total fire ban in place today. Chapman Valley, Greater Geraldton, Irwin and Northampton shires all have a total fire ban in place. If you want to know the details of what you can and can't do in a total fire ban, just search emergency in WA and they're easy to find on the homepage. It's also your responsibility to check if there's a harvest ban in place, and the city of Greater Geraldton, including Mullawar, has a harvest ban in place right now. And this afternoon, in around about an hour's time, DFAS is actually going to be having a media conference just to take a look at preparedness for the heat and the bushfire likelihood for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. They're obviously just a little bit concerned about people being otherwise preoccupied. The last thing they need is for some fires to be starting up. Just getting back to the rain, though, Georgia, it sounds like parts of Victoria have had some really wild weather over the weekend and then the last couple of days, storms and strong winds and large hailstones. They basically hit Victoria's north and northeast on Sunday morning, and parts of the northeast experienced really heavy rain. But up in the top end, there's also been some rain in the... We chatted yesterday about the monsoon season arriving, and in the last 24 hours, a fair few NT stations got 50 to 100 mils of rain, and I think most of them are probably pretty thankful of that. But I don't think they're quite as thankful as what they are in parts of Queensland, because Christmas has definitely come early for station owners in central Queensland. Some very welcome rain has fallen over the weekend and last night, and more could be on the way. Bob Elliott is on Belmont Station near Winton, and he says it started raining at about 1 in the morning.
Measured about 2 inches or 54 millimetres at about 6 o'clock, and there's been quite a bit of heavy rain since. So, yeah, I dare say we'd be up to about, 75, 80 mil now almost. No, and it seems to be quite widespread, at least in this area, particularly north of us. So, hopefully a lot of farmers are getting it out here. definitely needed. I mean, it's the best Christmas present you can get, I suppose. Rain, and generally around Christmas time is sort of when you can start expecting some bigger and better falls. Obviously, spring you can get storms and that, but yeah, you don't generally get your widespread rain. So yeah, no, generally come Christmas, New Year, that's when people are really starting to sort of hope for an early onset of the wet.
What's the forecast looking like for you in the next few days?
Oh, well, it actually looks really, really good, actually. I mean, good. We've got to be careful, though, because, yeah, there is a chance that there could be really substantial falls, and we all know what that can do. But yeah, there's nothing too outrageous on the forecast just yet. But, yeah, hopefully it'll just keep setting in and everyone gets the rain that they want. Yeah, at this stage, I think the forecast looks like it could go in into the new year. So we'll just keep an eye on it. But I think, relatively speaking, I think most stock in most areas are in pretty good condition. Thanks to that late March rain that we had last year, the feed had a lot more life in it over winter this year. So, yeah, can't speak for everyone, but I think a lot of people, I have heard that their stock held up a lot better this year than last year.
Will this rain change your Christmas plans, or is it going to be a few days in the house over Christmas?
Yeah, well, this rain change has already changed my plans. I was meant to go to Cairns to be with my fiancé's family, but that's not going to happen now, but that's okay. We'll wait till this rain change goes through and we'll probably do a mid-January catch-up instead. But, yeah, no, I think there might be a few families that will have to change plans. But, look, it's not a bad Christmas present to get the rain. It's what our livelihoods depend on it. So, yeah, no, I think I'll just sit back and enjoy the rain this Christmas.
Bob Elliott from Belmont Station, which is near Winton. So that's about 1,500 kilometres northwest of Brisbane. And after Madeline McCosker spoke with him this morning, it kept on raining. Let's hope it doesn't turn into some serious floods. Now, Deborah Smith is a little north of Winton on Limbury Downs Station. So far, they had about 100 mil of rain, which was very welcome, especially after fighting bushfires that burned over 2,000 hectares of their property last week. And Deborah says everything is pretty muddy now.
I'd had some green peek through my grass, but yeah, after the fires last week, it's very welcomed.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about those fires last week. Lightning was starting fires in your paddocks.
Yeah, it did. It was there was multiple strikes, lit up four of the paddocks, and it all eventually joined together to possibly burnt up to 5,000 acres of country. We had 12 units and about 25 people here, and yeah, we eventually got it out.
So a lot of burned country, but how much will this rain help and set you up for next year?
Oh, very, very well. It's very well received. It on that burnt country especially, it'll give it a good chance of getting started again, because this country doesn't take kindly to fires.
Are you stuck at your place now?
Yes, I was supposed to go and get some fresh vegetables and fruit for Christmas, but that's not happening, not today anyway.
Deborah Smith from Limbury Downs Station over in Queensland, and she was speaking with Hannah Walsh. It's 12 to 1.
On the first day of Christmas, my good friends brought to me.
Now, if you've got a Christmas tree up at your place, did you opt for a plastic tree or a real one? Looks like demand for real Christmas trees is growing, and one producer in WA's Great Southern expects more festive farms to start popping up in the near future. Marty Parskett and his partner Samit grow about 2,000 pine trees in a small paddock on their property in Denmark. Marty says he's been tapped on the shoulder recently to supply the Perth market more, but he's quite content with where he's at.
Yeah, we opened actually a tiny bit earlier than we normally do, just because of the kind of being a weekend. And yeah, I was running all weekend. Weekdays aren't too bad. It tends to be after school for weekdays, but yeah, weekends are flat out.
And you've been growing Christmas trees for more than two decades. Is that correct?
Yeah, 25 years now.
25 years. How has demand changed since you started 25 years ago?
I think the demand's always been there, but it was for us, it was just the ability to let people know that we were here and we were doing it. So back in the early days for us, we used to actually own a truck and truck them up to Perth and sell them through nurseries. To be honest, was a bit of a nightmare. A lot of work involved pricing the trees and setting them up for the nurseries and paying them a percentage as well. These days, people just know we're here and it's fantastic. I just hang around the shed for a month and just talk to customers and sell trees, you know, so it's great now.
It gets pretty cold in the southern parts of our state, but not quite the North Pole conditions. so what weather conditions are you after when you're growing the trees? And were you happy this season?
The trees are pretty tough, but this year's been great. We had those late heavy rains, which has been awesome. I'm kind of noticing a difference this year is just in, it's not so much how fresh they are, but just that they're really booming. This is actually the trees' growing time as well. So I'm really noticing how much the trees are changing sort of week by week at the moment. So those decent heavy later rains that we had were fantastic. And obviously we've been sitting in a fair bit of sunshine at the moment too, which is also great.
Have you had a lot of excited kids coming through? And maybe excited parents, you know, Christmas spirit is for everyone, you know, hoping to find Santa hiding behind the trees or just so happy to be in that festive, in such a festive space.
Yeah, and that's awesome, Amelia. Like on a Saturday or a Sunday, there'll be, I don't know, 20 or 30 kids just running around squealing in the paddock and mum and dad's trying to chase them down, you know. So parents get sort of into it as much as the kids. A lot of times they get all dressed up. They got wrapped up with tinsel and a reindeer T-shirt on or something like that. So, yeah, the vibe is also fantastic as well.
Are you mainly supplying the Great Southern region or who's buying?
Pretty much anyone who can get down here and choose a tree is buying. We've got a lot of customers from, like you say, definitely the Great Southern region is where we live and sell our trees. But we've got customers that come from all over. We've got a couple that come specifically from Margaret River, which is, fair drive. Come out, choose their tree, turn around, go straight back home, or they just might spend an overnight or in Denmark. And also people from, you know, Katanning and Kojonup and kind of nearby but still a fair drive to get out here will come and choose a tree. So, yeah, which is awesome.
I imagine it's quite the process to get trees into the back of a truck or a car, let alone if you were to pop it on a ship and send them overseas. Would you at any point look at exporting them overseas or is that just too much?
Look, no, because we're just not big enough for that. I have been getting wholesale inquiries from Perth because one or two of the bigger growers in Perth aren't able to provide, or one of the big guys is retired, so the supply in Perth has become a little bit small. So I have been getting some wholesale inquiries from Perth, and I, to be honest, can't even supply that. Otherwise, I would be leaving my customers short, you know. So like I say, we are small but tidy. We're suitable for just this area, to be honest.
You're open for business about a month each year selling your Christmas trees. Marty, what do you do when it's not the festive season?
Oh, well, that's when I'm pruning them and maintaining my paddock and fertilising them and grass control and weed control and all of these types of things, you know. So it's all the behind-the-scenes stuff that produces a nice, fluffy Christmas tree-shaped tree at the end of the year.
Is there enough money in Christmas tree farming to have that be your predominant source of income, or is there something else that you have to do to supplement it?
No, unfortunately, I've got a real job as well. it's a great end of the year bonus, but it's definitely not enough for us anyway to make a living on. If we were bigger and closer to Perth, potentially for sure, but no, we're just a small business down south here, and which is great. You know, we like it. It's just a really nice, easygoing business for us. You know, it's great.
So what do you think the future holds for natural Christmas trees? Because obviously it's tricky to make money. You know, margins are already tight. Do you expect that more people are going to start up their own Christmas tree farms, or what are your predictions?
Possibly, yeah. I've noticed there's another one in the Great Southern started, and good luck to them. That, you know, I've got no problem with competition. but yeah, potentially the market's there for sure. Like I said, the market in Perth is massive, and there definitely isn't the supply of trees up there. So if you had a property that was very close to Perth that you could get water onto your trees and get them shaped and whatnot, you'd potentially make that good living that you were talking about earlier. But down here, there's still plenty of people that want to buy a Christmas tree. Not everyone wants to drive out to Denmark to get one. So, yeah.
Marty Paskett, he's the co-owner and grower of Spirit Christmas Trees in Denmark and Albany, and he was speaking with Amelia Searson. And as you heard, he's been growing Christmas trees for over 20 years. But across the border in South Australia's Riverland, Sarah and David Plush are harvesting and selling their first ever crop of Christmas trees after diversifying from oranges 3 years ago. And while there's been a few teething issues, Sarah says the trees are looking pretty impressive.
They're definitely taller than I am, and I'm not, what am I, not 6 foot, so they're well and truly 6-7 feet high.
Your kids were saying they were going to be taller than them by the time you're ready to harvest them, and you're ready to harvest them now.
We are ready. I reckon all three kids can probably stand on each other's shoulders and the trees would probably still be taller than them. They are looking pretty impressive.
So you've had a bit of success, I guess, with this first crop, but tell me about how you've gotten to this stage.
My husband's probably done most of the work. In the early days, it was a lot of hand weeding while the trees were quite young, and just keeping the water up to them. Keeping the weeds down and the water up is pretty much what we've done over the last 3 years.
You're going to be selling some Christmas trees for people this year.
We are, yes. Probably won't have people. I'd love to be able to have people come out, but not this year. This year will be done more through photos on Facebook, and we can then deliver the trees to them. So, yeah, we'll just take photos. They can pick what number tree they want, and we'll do it that way.
Have you had much interest in your trees so far since letting people know that you guys will be having Christmas trees available?
We're sort of slowly starting to get the word out there, I guess, just letting people know that we are here and that we do have some trees available.
Well, since beginning your Christmas tree venture a couple of years ago and they're obviously looking pretty good, have you had other people coming to talk to you about looking into them? Because obviously people are definitely talking about diversifying in the Riverland if they can, if they want to stay here.
No, we haven't actually. We do sort of talk to friends and that sort of thing, and they're like, what, who, you know, why would you do Christmas trees? And a bit sort of surprised, I guess, when they find out that it is what we're doing. But no, haven't had too many other people wanting to get into the Christmas tree business yet.
Well, they look absolutely beautiful. Sarah, should we ask David a few questions, do you think? David, how are you feeling about this venture to keep yourself close to your family and keep your family in the region?
These first batch of trees have been probably not too bad to look after because they took off pretty easily. But the second batch that we were trying to get going has been a lot more frustrating and hard work because they started to be, when we planted them, they were a lot smaller, and so they've just taken so much more effort to try and get moving. But I hope that when they do get moving that we'll end up getting to similar heights, or maybe not quite as high as we have got these ones. But last year when I looked at these, Sarah asked me whether we can cut them, and I said, they're only a bit over just 6 foot. Why would you cut them now? And people want it bigger than that. And now I'm looking at it going, maybe if Christmas had come, would have been a June thing, it would have been the right time.
Christmas in July, perhaps.
Yeah, pretty much. But no, some of these are quite tall, and I suppose if we have to trim them back down a bit or cut some limbs on the bottom to make them some shorter, then that's what we have to do.
Winky Christmas Trees owners David and Sarah Plush, who farm over in South Australia, and they were speaking there with Eliza Burledge. It's 2 minutes to one on the Country Hour this afternoon.
Hello, I'm Stephanie Smale. Join me for The World Today. Contentious new laws come closer to passing in New South Wales as community groups flag a Supreme Court challenge. How to bring people back from radicalisation as the government reveals a disturbing number of children on terror charges. And Donald Trump's plan to build a golden fleet of battleships as regional tensions rise. Those stories and more coming up on The World Today.
Now, the 2026 finalists for the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award have been announced, and three women from regional WA are on the list. Susanna Moss-Wright, who is based in Williams, she's developed a premium brand of Wagyu lamb. Midwest farmer Fiona Mann has been nominated for her value-adding project, turning canola into premium cold-pressed oil. And we also have Angela Teal. She's in the Midwest as well. And she's leading a project which aims to establish WA as a hub in global space communications. And she's going to do that by building a 20-metre lunar-class antenna in Mullawar. So there's some pretty strong contenders here. So a very big congratulations to Susanna Moss-Wright, Fiona Mann and Angela Teal for being nominated as the WA finalists in the 2026 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. Now, before you go, I'll just squeeze one last text in. This is from Weather Wally, who says, I can guarantee with winds from the north, Albany will be a lot hotter on Xmas and Boxing Days than just 30 degrees. You're probably right there. Thanks for that text, and thanks for your company on the Country Hour this afternoon. News time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.